show has begun.
Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with Wallace Eaton, Alma Cogan, June Whitfield, and the keynotes, all inviting you to...
Take it from me.
I know it's easy to scoff at hypnotism, Jim, but what do we know of the power of the mind? Who knows what strange effects can be achieved by tapping the human brain?
Well, we can soon find out. Lean forward. I got a hammer somewhere. Look, Bentley, I also read the newspaper articles about hypnotism. Why are you so anxious to convince me about it?
Because it helped me, Jim, and I know it can help you. I used to buy 14 packets of cigarettes a day.
Well, I didn't know you smoked so heavily.
I don't. There was a blonde in the tobacconist shop. Hypnotism helped me to overcome the craving.
Oh, pity.
And Jim, it can do the same with your craving for June Whitfield. It's all a matter of will.
Well, with June, it's all a matter of won't. I'm not letting myself be hypnotized, Bentley. It's dangerous.
No, it's not. It's just done by suggestion.
Oh, well, Jim's never been averse to a touch of the suggestive.
Please. Besides, hypnotism can't make you do anything that's foreign to your nature, like doing a murder... or paying for a round of drinks. And it takes no time. The doctor put me in a complete coma. Then with just a snap of the fingers, I was my usual self again.
How could he tell?
Oh. But you don't have to go to him, Jim. Now that hypnotism is officially recognized by the medical profession, you can have it done by your own GPO.
Well, Bentley, I can't just walk into my doctor and ask to have my June removed. I haven't got enough stamps on my card, anyway.
Look, do what I did. I just explained there was a girl in the tobacconist shop who'd become such an obsession I was spending all my money on cigarettes.
And hypnotism got rid of this obsession?
Yeah.
Completely?
Completely. I'm cured. Never been back to the shop since. Have a wine gum.
No, thanks.
Oh. Licorice all sort.
No, thanks. No.
Old English butter drop.
No, thank you. Bentley, you must eat a lot of sweets.
About 80 packets a day.
80 packets?
Well, you see, there's a brunette in the sweet shop and...
Oh, Jimmy.
Oh, Bentley.
You dream boats. You lovable dream boats. The kisses you gave me set my dreams aflow. Told me to go and paddle my own canoe. Sincerely, I love you so dearly. I'd follow you, darling, to any shore. You dreamboats, you lovable dreamboats. Oh, won't you say you're mine forevermore? You dreamboats, you lovable dreamboats. The kisses you gave me set my dreams afloat. I would sail the seven seas with you, even if you told me to go and paddle my own canoe. Sincerely, I love you so dearly. I'd follow you, darling, to any shore. You dreamboat, you lovable dreamboat, won't you say you're mine forevermore?
What's your Jim? Just been out to buy the missus one of them things you use for playing deck tennis.
A quoit?
No, yacht.
Oh. Well, anyway, I nearly guessed it.
Yeah.
Nearly, but not quite. Well, wealthy Wal, are you buying that yacht to cheer the missus up?
Oh, no, I've got another scheme for that, Jim. You know my big house in the country? I'm throwing it open to the public at weekends, advertising charter trips. $0.50 a nob to visit Wallace Palace and the Garden of Eton.
Is it a commodious place, Wall?
Oh, no, it's quite large. And there's a lot to see, including a conservatory what's reputed to be haunted.
But a haunted conservatory?
Yeah. The legend has it, 3 old ladies got locked in there from Monday to Saturday. And nobody knew they was there, see? In addition, there's a spacious grounds comprising of lawns made of pure grass, orchards, shrubbery, dovecots, and, if you're interested, a little piggery behind the bushes.
I am interested.
Animals, Mr. B. Oh. I keep quite a few domestic animals. Besides the piggery, there's an aviary and a hennery.
Hennery?
He looks after the piggery.
Well, anyway, we'll certainly put Wallace Palace down on our list of future things to see. Oh, I say, Dunners, I'm busy. Yes. Didn't we have a thought about future things to see?
Oh, yes, we did, sir. It was on the subject of film trailers. The thought was, what a vast difference there is between the trailer of a film and the film itself. The exciting scenes they show you in a trailer, how disappointing they are when you see the complete film. But take the trailer they showed 1 week at our local.
Oh, no, Roger. No, we mustn't. It's not right.
No. Darling, we're not children.
No, Roger, no. Oh, Roger, we mustn't. No, no.
Well, that's as much of the scene as they showed in the trailer. And so, naturally, we dashed along to the cinema the following week with ninepence in our hot little hands to see how the scene finished. And
no, Roger,
this was
no.
How it finished.
Roger, we mustn't. No, no.
But why not, darling, why not?
Because if the notice says do not walk on the grass, we shouldn't walk on the grass.
Our other example is when they had a British war picture showing all next week. The trailer gave us this glimpse.
Keep the engine steady. How's the fuel in number 2 tank, Jacker?
I'm keeping my fingers crossed, Skip.
Keep her straight, man. Steady. Steady. Give me a fix, Jacker.
Righter. I make our position exactly 8 fathoms below the hull of the Tirpitz.
8 fathoms below. I don't like it. I don't like it.
Well, that was as much as the trailer showed. Next week, we saw the end of the scene.
8 fathoms below the hull of the Tirpitz. I don't like it, Jacker. I don't like it.
Why not, sir?
We happen to be in an aeroplane.
Tithe's talking point. Once again, we meet the Glums, our family of ordinary people meeting life's problems. Today, their talking point is it true that there are 3 types of married women? The beautiful, the brainy, and the majority. So, over to the Glums.
Ever since we definitely decided our weddings to be Whitson, oh, I've been so excited, I can't settle. I keep going all shivery. Oh, Ron, aren't you all of a twit?
Now, eh?
Oh, not at all, Ron.
Well, I am a bit of a twit.
What's making me so nervy is all the fuss and palaver at home. Oh, do you know that my mother's like an old hen?
Yes, eh? Especially when she walks.
I mean about the arrangements, Ron. Mm. Oh, the latest thing is the bridesmaids. My mother says they should just be Auntie Lily's ginger twins. But your dad is insisting on also having your cousin Leonard as a page boy. Oh, my mother says Leonard will spoil the whole picture.
But, Eth, why shouldn't Leonard be a page boy?
Oh, Ron. Ron. He's 6'1". My mother's in tears. Oh, Ron, if we don't do something about it, there'll be a situation. There's already an atmosphere. Oh, I'm beginning to think we'd be better off with a simple registry office, do.
Or we could run away and get married over the anvil at Golders Green, eh?
Yes.
Nice.
Oh, lovely. But still, Ron, I suppose for the sake of peace, you'd better do something about it. Find a way of talking your father out of having Leonard. Got any ideas, Ron?
Yes, eh?
No, Ron, I didn't mean that.
Go on, Eff, just a kiss.
Hello, dummy run. Here, Ron, this form what I've been given to fill in, giving full details of all members of the household eligible to vote. Offhand, can you recall your mother's Christian name?
Oh, go on, Ron, tackle him.
Dad, all Eth's mum wants is ginger twins, and you've got to do something about it. You have, Dad.
Hey!
Well, what Ron means, Mr. Glum, is, well, it's having Leonard as page boy. My mother doesn't want him.
Well, what's wrong with Lofty? If you're worried his tallness affecting the height he holds your train up, I'll have a sharp word with him beforehand. Anyway, he's very short-sighted.
Well, I know. He's a nice enough boy, Mr. Glum.
Of course he is.
Oh, 6'1", and in lime green satin. Oh, my mother's going frantic.
Oh, I admit he's a bit tall for 13 years old, but why shouldn't he be page boy?
I don't think it's prudence, Dad.
What isn't?
Mum's Christian name.
Oh. Mr. Glum, I still think it's up to you to give way this time. You had your way about which paper to insert our engagement announcement in.
And what's wrong with the Greyhound Chronicle? Just because they refer to your father and mother as your sire and dam, well, I can't.
Oh, please, Mr. Glum, cancel Leonard.
Well.
As a special favour to me.
She's got round me again. Well, all right, Eff.
Oh.
But he'll be a very disappointed boy. You'll have to make it up to him some way.
Oh, I will.
Perhaps we can take him with us on the honeymoon.
That's it, Ron. He's no trouble. Dresses himself and all that, you know. But, you know, it'll still be a considerable blow to Mrs. Glum, you know. I shall have to give her a call. I'll have to raise my voice a little because she's listening to that lovely wireless set I bought her last week. She just put the earphones on. Mama! I'm afraid that the bride's family have refused to have young Leonard as page boy at Ron and Eth's marriage nuptials.
Oh, Mr. Glum, did she get a shock?
Not half, Eth. She's gone and plugged the earphones into the PowerPoint.
And tropical fish.
Holle, holle.
Find that happiness simply delish.
Holle, holle.
Eat and sleep in as much as they wish. Birds and puppies and tropical fish. Oh, ain't it true? Ain't it the doggone truth?
Birdies never worry when the weather's cold and clammy. Oh, they just take one look and then they fly down to Miami.
Oh, birds and puppies and tropical fish.
Holle, holle.
Find that living is simply delish.
Holle, holle.
Eat and sleep in as much as they wish. Birds and puppies and tropical fish.
I say, Bentley, isn't it wonderful how these inventor chaps manage to keep finding new things to invent?
Oh, I don't know, Your Grace. Sometimes they start on a thing without having the slightest idea where it's going to lead them.
No. Like Your Grace and that waitress in the dining room. Let's give you an awful example.
The whole incredible story started in the research laboratory of Francis Parkinson and Keyes, the enormous firm of manufacturing chemists. Professor Edwards, the chief research chemist, is explaining his latest experiment to Sir Angus Parkinson, the managing director.
Well, now, here is the liquid, Sir Angus. I believe it to be the most important advance in chemistry since Sedlitz discovered powder.
It's great work, Professor, but what exactly does the fluid do?
I'll tell you in three words. I don't know. But we shall find out what it does very soon. I injected a trial half gallon into my assistant, George Potter. That's him under the sheet there.
He's dead?
I don't know. That's what makes chemistry such fun. We'll know all right when he wakes up. If he wakes up.
But a reaction from one man is no enough. We should also test its effect on a female.
Oh, sorry, Poppet. I didn't know you were busy.
Oh, Cynthia, darling. Sir Angus, this is my fiancée, Cynthia Merton. She just popped round with an eyedropper.
Eyedropper?
That plunging neckline, dear. I see, Cynthia. Would you be so kind help me in a bit of scientific research? Just lie down on the table next to George and pull that sheet over you.
Over here?
That's it, yes. Now, just a teeny-weeny injection. You won't feel a thing. Sir Angus, aye, the bucket and the garden syringe, please.
Here we are.
Thank you. There.
Oh, the lass is asleep already. But look, the other sheet's moving. That will be George Porter coming round.
Well, now we'll know what effect the liquid has. I knew it wouldn't kill old George. He's an ex-rugger blue, you know. Aye. Just pull the sheet back, Sir Angus.
Right.
George!
By Jove, I enjoyed that sleep.
George!
I say, Professor, I don't know what that liquid did, but I feel a different person.
But, George, I've said I'm sorry.
Oh, yes, but...
I never dreamt the stuff would change you into a woman.
Well, that's all very well now, but...
I can only apologize and request that you don't keep harping on the subject.
But I'm playing rugger this afternoon. By jingo, this is going to cause a bit of talk in the old Harlequin's changing room.
George, I appreciate it's difficult for you, but talk about something else. Be a good chap.
I can't be any sort of chap. Oh, look, Professor, it's going to... Hey, look, that other sheet's moving.
Oh, good grief, Cynthia! I'd forgotten all about her. You don't suppose that she's... Oh. Quick, pull the sheet back. Cynthia, darling...
Hello, Poppet.
Cynthia!
Oh, what a lovely little doze I've had.
Oh, no.
Jim Jams? Why are you staring at me like that? Is my nose shiny? Huh? Is it?
Cynthia, darling, I... Oh... What have I done? Cynthia, there is something I feel you should know.
Yeah, well, in no time now, sweetie pie. I must dash. I've got my dress fitting at 3.
Cynthia, one thing I can assure you, the dress won't fit.
The dress won't... What are you talking about, darling? Have you gone off your... Jim, who is this girl? So that's what's been happening while I've been asleep.
Oh, no, Cynthia, nothing like that, I assure you.
I'm George Potter.
A likely story. Oh, you men are all the same.
George isn't.
Cynthia, old girl, prepare yourself for a bit of a shock. I am George Potter. The professor's drug changed me into a girl.
What?
And Cynthia, steel yourself. It's changed you into a man.
What? Give me that mirror. Oh, Jim, how could you? If you had to change me into a man, you might at least have changed me into a decent-looking one.
I'm sorry, darling, but you've got the stuff at the bottom of the bucket, you see.
Professor, I've just had a horrible thought.
I've no doubt you have. What is it, George? What is it, George,
well,
old
professor,
man?
Professor, there's still some of the liquid left in the bucket. What would happen if it were to evaporate into the atmosphere? Oh, Professor, suppose just breathing it is enough to make people change their size.
Oh, this is terrible. We must take emergency measures. Sir Angus, would you come in here a moment? Sir Angus, there is a danger that the liquid has got into the atmosphere. If so, Sir Angus, anyone just breathing it might change.
You're telling me, Professor?
Within a month, the vapor had swept England. But I was too concerned with my personal problems to worry about other people. There were lots of things I had to get used to. Such as having to button up my coat the other side. Yes, it was the following Wednesday that Jim and I had our first serious talk about us.
Cynthia, darling, so far you've been absolutely wonderful about this whole beastly mess. Don't give way now. Here, dry your eyes.
Thank you. I'm being as brave as I can. Jim, I've thought this thing over from every angle, and Jim, I'm going to release you from our engagement.
If you wish, Cynthia, this will be a blow to my mother. He was very fond of you.
Oh, no. Don't tell me your mother is also...
Yes, rather suddenly. At the tennis club. Absolutely ruined the mixed double. By July, the changeover was absolutely complete, except for one person, Jim.
Jim, dear, I know you think I'm just a silly, empty-headed slip of a girl. But I've got a theory. I think it's your moustache that's made you immune.
By golly, that's scientifically possible. We never thought of the moustache, Professor. There might well be something in it.
There isn't. I searched it this morning. I was just feeling a little peckish, you know.
It must be the answer. Your moustache contains some filtering agent we could use as an antidote. Oh, give me the scissors. I'll cut it all off.
No, not all of it. I shall have to buy a tea strainer.
Oh, it must be all of it, Professor. That moustache may save England.
I've got the scissors. Lip forward, Jim.
Yes. Now, if I dissolve it in water, we should have an antidote that we can spray on the whole population. Oh, drop the moustache in the bucket, Cynthia. Now, give me the spray. Right. Now, Cynthia, I'm going to try it on you. Stand here. Oh, to think that the whole future of England may depend on this one little squirt.
Well, there's a nice thing to call a person who's had enough trouble.
Oh, Cynthia, stand still. Well, here goes. Well, Cynthia?
No, George. It hasn't worked. It hasn't changed me back to what I was.
So there is still no antidote. Oh, Professor, why did you have to invent that liquid?
Never mind that, you clot. Why did you have to cut my moustache off?
Oh, Jim!
Harriet Rabinowitz and the augmented BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Doris Bentley and Professor Jenny Edwards. Encouraged by Wendy Eaton, Arthur Cogan, John Whitfield and the keynotes. The announcer was Daphne Dunhill. Fanny Muir and Denise Norton wrote the script and the program was produced by Charlotte Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in again next week and...
Take it from...